It's one of experience. What's going to drive, push our attempt towards this great goal and to stop us from being turned over, so to speak, when we don't have a full experience of Krishna? Because to have the full experience of Krishna, we have to be pure. And to be pure, you have to really want that. And to want it, you have to have enough experience. That's sort of another way of saying that. So, because we have no experience, I mean, not a full experience, yet we get some experience. And if we don't get some experience, we're going to be in trouble, in difficulty. So where do we get an experience? So Rupa Goswami has described in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu and Nectar of Devotion, Prabhupada, in summary of that, has described he's described that there are five very powerful items of devotional service, Panchanga Bhakti. And even if you don't even have faith in them, they will, even a little bit of attention to them will bring great results, as long as you don't commit offenses. And those are chanting, Nama Sankirtan. So when we chant, when there's a wonderful kirtan, then there's an experience, a taste that's of Krishna and serving Krishna. Even for a beginner, you can get some taste that's not of this world. Then Namasankirtan, Bhagavata Shravan, hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam from the great acharyas and realized speakers. You can actually experience something about Krishna just by hearing the words, because we may not know anything about Krishna, but Sukadeva Goswami knows something about Krishna, Srila Vyasadeva knows something about Krishna, Maharaj Yudhisthira knows something about Krishna. So by hearing their words describing what it's like to be a devotee of Krishna, we can also experience something about it. And according to how deep our own devotion is, we'll experience more or less. Then the third one is Sadhu Sangha, the association of devotees. In the association of devotees, that's where devotional, all the other processes of devotional service gain more power. And the fourth is Mathura Vrindavan Vas. We live or go to the holy places. And there's one. When you went to Vrindavan the first time, what did you expect here on?
To experience something more spiritual, to see.
And you've been three times, yes? Yeah. So, you, of course, before you go, you don't know what.
Not what?
You don't really know what to expect, but you expect something, because everyone talks, oh, Vrindavan is so nice, Vrindavan is so nice, Vrindavan is so nice. Mm-hmm. And were you satisfied? Were you satisfied? Honestly.
I think it's never what we expect. It's never like how we experience it. It's always different than what we expect.
Yes.
So I can't answer if it was above or below my expectations.
But were you satisfied? I remember one time you went, when you went alone, and you weren't distracted by anything.
Mm-hmm.
And that again was somewhat different.
It was amazing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because when I'm, everything of course depends on our consciousness, how much we perceive. What filters through into us depends on our consciousness. But yet these holy places, Vrindavan Mayapur especially, are so powerful. You went just that one time? What did you think when you first went?
It some places I really appreciate it. But some places again, I did not expect, like, especially the outside Krishna Vallam movement, there was, it's like more commercial than...
More, it's like more than Bombay.
That's right.
More traffic than Bombay.
Yeah.
It used to be a peaceful place. And anyway, and the fifth one is not worshipping the deities, but with Shraddha, with faith. Very, very, very powerful. So if one puts attention into these five, or four of them, or three of them, or two of them, or even one of them, a little attention, then one can experience something about Krishna. There's a different flavor. It's a flavor that is not of this world, enters the consciousness and touches our hearts, touches us. And we gradually decide, well, this is what I want. And I don't want anything else. When that is burning, when that desire, that taste is burning brightly, then it will burn to ashes all the rest of our desires. Did that answer your question? Sure. So it's a tricky thing that we have material desires, so therefore we can't experience purity, pure love in our relationship with Krishna. But if we have pure love for Krishna, it will burn away our material desires. So on one level, it seems like we're caught, but it's we move a step forward this way, and then those material things become, desires become more obvious, more obviously obstacles and detrimental, and we don't want them. Because in the beginning, we want them. We want our material desires because we think that they are the cause of our happiness. What are you doing? You brought more painting
little people.
Painting little people. Are you going to put the little people in the big black box? It's going to take a lot of little people to fill that box. So we go forward, and sometimes we're pulled a little back by our material desires, and then we get frustrated, and then we want to take shelter more, we pray to Krishna to help us. And this way we move forward. Any other questions or comments? Sava did amazing work when he was here.
Yeah, he just took us down this afternoon. It was quite amazing, isn't it? To see it all in place and how it will work.
Yeah.
Quite amazing.
Walking to Mayapur and there'll be sounds of Mayapur. Walking to Puri and there'll be sounds of Puri. Walking to Vrindavan and there'll be sounds of Vrindavan. Up in the box and you hear Bangla. Up in the box and you hear Arian. Up in the box and you maybe hear some.
Indeed.
We didn't do that much. Sometimes just when it comes back.
Any other questions? We can go on and read some more. So you just know, I'll just continue. Within your mind, there can be no such differentiation as this one is mind and that is another's, because you are the supreme absolute truth, the soul of all beings, always equipoised and enjoying transcendental happiness within yourself. These are the qualities of the Supreme Lord. Always equipoised, because what means always balanced, never out of balance. And always enjoying transcendental happiness within yourself, because the Supreme is composed of bliss. So you have no such distinction between this is mine, this is belongs to someone else, that's just born of false ego, and you have no false ego. You are the soul of all beings. You give life to everyone. Just like the heavenly desired trees, you bless all who properly worship you, granting their desired fruits in proportion to the service they render you. There's nothing wrong in this. Purport. Srila Sridharaswamy explains that a desired tree has no material attachments or partiality, but simply bestows its fruits upon those who deserve them, and not upon others. Srila Jiva Goswami Prabhupada adds that a desired tree does not think, this person is fit to worship me, but that other person is not. Rather, a desired tree is satisfied with all who properly serve it. And the Lord acts in the same way, as explained here by King Yudhisthira. So because Yudhisthira has asked him for something, please help us perform this Rajasuya sacrifice successfully. And he's explained his motives, and then he said, you're not thinking, you just, please reciprocate with our desires. He's basically saying, he's ending with this is the final prayer in his words to Krishna. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur adds that no one should accuse Lord Krishna of being envious of one person and showing favoritism towards another. Since the Lord is Swasukhanubhuti, experiencing his own happiness within himself. He has nothing to gain or lose in relationship to conditioned souls. Rather, he reciprocates according to how they approach him. Srila Prabhupada very nicely sums up this point as follows in his rendering of King Yudhisthira's statement. If one takes the Krishna consciousness, his life becomes fulfilled both materially and spiritually. This does not mean that you are partial to the Krishna conscious person and indifferent to the non-Krishna conscious person. You are equal to everyone. That is your declaration. You cannot be partial to one and not interested in others, because you are sitting in everyone's heart as the Supersoul and giving everyone the respective results of his fruitive activities. You give every living entity the chance to enjoy this material world as he desires. As the Supersoul, you are sitting in the body along with the living entity, giving him the results of his own actions, as well as opportunities to turn towards your devotional service by developing Krishna consciousness. You openly declare that one should surrender unto you, giving up all other engagements, and you will take charge of him, giving him relief from the reactions of all sins. You are like the desire trees in the heavenly planets, which award benedictions according to one's desires. Everyone is free to achieve the highest perfection, but if one does not so desire, then your awarding of lesser benedictions is not due to partiality. So a point is being made here that when one, Yudhisthira is asking for something wonderful, so everyone wants something wonderful. The proportion of billionaires in this world is very different from the number of billionaires in this world is very different from those who want to be billionaires. So, is this due to the favoritism of God, that he's allowing everyone, 5,000 million people want to be billionaires and only 1,000 become billionaires? So is that due to the mercy and the favoritism of God, the partiality of the Supreme Lord? That's the issue that's being addressed here. Is he being partial to award Yudhisthira his request to perform the Radhasuya sacrifice and become the emperor? Is he being partial to his devotee? So the answer is yes and no. That he's reciprocating with everyone according to what they desire, those who are in the material world and also his devotees. So first, we talk about the general statement, that he reciprocates with everyone according to their desires, quite equally. This is explained by Krishna in the 9th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Samoham Sarvabhuteshu. I'm equal to all living entities. Name dvesha stina priya. I don't show any favoritism. No one is dear to me, and Same priya do I especially have affection for. So this is how Krishna reciprocates with everyone in general. He is like the law. according to how people act, they either get punished by the law or they get rewarded by the law. It is the responsibility is on the person. That's Krishna acting as the supersoul. But also Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, in that same verse, Ye bhajanti tumam bhaktya maya jitesi chakraha, that but those, uses the word to or but, putting the devotees in a different category, but for one who worships me with devotion, I don't reciprocate with them in that same equal, impartial, neutral way. For them, I take special care of them. I take special care of them. So this is not partiality, in one sense. It's completely natural. Prabhupada explains in his purport to that verse, just like the owner of a factory will treat all his employees equally. But if his own son is employed in the factory, he'll treat him equally, but a little specially more equally. So that's completely natural. Because the devotees don't behave neutrally towards the Lord, he doesn't behave neutrally towards them. So on one level, that's an equal reciprocation, because they're not behaving neutrally, so he's not behaving neutrally. At another level, it looks like it's a kind of partiality, but another level, it's quite equal. Because they love him specially, and they're focused on pleasing him, so he loves them specially, and is focused on pleasing them. So therefore, Yudhisthira is saying that this is not just partiality. You give them their desired fruits in proportion to the service they render you. There is nothing wrong in this. There was some in the United States one time, they were religious people, famous religious people, when they would arrive in airports. The government would give them special treatment. So there's atheists in the United States that are very organized. So they were protesting that, why do you give religious people special treatment? Because the U.S. Constitution says that you can't favor any religion. So why do you shouldn't give them any special treatment? So one devotee, he said to me, well, it isn't special treatment, because I can't remember exactly how he put it, but it was very clever. He said that you get treatment according to what you believe. If you believe in God, you get godly treatment. And if you believe in nothing, you get nothing. It's fair. Why is it not partiality? Why is it partiality? It's not favoritism. You're getting what you believe in. Something. So now Krishna is going to respond to what Yudhisthira said. So he's saying that this is not going to be favoritism. This is quite natural. Well, tomorrow, Sister Willie, we shall hear that with Krishna's responses.
Tomorrow we'll hear about Balaram.
Yes, tomorrow we'll hear about Balaram. Balaram, yes. Very wonderful. Any questions or comments? Tomorrow, text 7. Question.
Why did they? What is this people that they treat nicely?
The Pope.
Oh.
Probably coming when he arrives, and they have a big reception or something like that. He's a dignitary. for the atheists for protesting. Envious.
So it seems as though one of the reasons that Krishna took longer to get to the king is because of the intimate affection that he shared for the Pandavas. Didn't go right away because how could he, you know, stay there in a short time?
Well, that leads to many interesting questions and points. One is, then you go back to what Yaron asked us today. We could have done both at once. Now,
yeah.
Why should he? So because he loves them, he's going to let they love him more. So everyone else is going to have to suffer for months and wait. Then when are they going to ever say it's okay that you can leave us and go save all these suffering people, kings?
I have a good idea. Then that must mean that there was some special nectar in the king's waiting.
Yes, that's what we discussed that yesterday.
Yeah.
If they were thinking, Krishna's coming, when is Krishna coming? Their desire. And thinking about Krishna, they were actually experiencing Krishna.
Don't they offer some prayers at the end and I say something like that?
We shall hear. Because the end will come fairly soon. The next beginning of the next chapter, they offer their prayers. Because by that desire in Krishna, it burns all the materialism in the heart. Because their desire, for their own reasons, for Krishna to be with them, was increasing and increasing. Increasing. So if we don't desire, if we have no desire, intense desire, then nothing happens. Nothing happens deeply in our spiritual life. It's all based on intense desire. It's not mechanical. So Krishna was in fact increasing the intensity of their desire by saying that he would coming and waiting sometimes.
It seemed like he was living there in Vrindavan. You know, the gopis, some of the gopis, they were feeling.
They were what?
Well, like thinking about him all the time because he wasn't there.
And in that thinking about him, they were continuously with him. Because thinking about Krishna was that was their entrance into the uppercut leader, his unmanifested pastimes that were going on, where he's always with them.
Could it be said that the
in that sense, Krishna never leaves Vrindavan, because he's always there in uppercut, unmanifested, in his unmanifested pastime. Unmanifested means unmanifested to our eyes, but it's always manifest there. But it's a multi-dimensional reality. It's multi-dimensional. It's obvious that reality is multi-dimensional because yesterday that little grasshopper was there. So his perception of what he was doing on this carpet was completely different from what our perception was. And again, Dhruva's perception was completely different too of what goes on. And when you hear Prabhupada speak, his perception of what reality is completely different from our perception. I heard someone ask Prabhupada a question. He was a book distributor. And he asked Prabhupada, people say to us that the only time we ever see you is when you want to either sell us books or ask us for money. And they ask that to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada's response is, that's okay. If you want to see us all, if you want to see us more, you can come and stay with us. You can stay. You can see me 24 hours a day. You can stay with me 24 hours a day. That's okay if you want to see me more. And then, after 3 days, you'll become like me. That's a promise. So I was thinking, because Prabhupada's answers were often like that. You're not sure if he understood the question. But then I thought about it, and thought about what was the person really asking when he's saying, he's asking, are you just trying to make money off of us, or this is all you do all day long? What is your life? So actually Prabhupada's answer, do you want to see what our life is? You come and stay with us. You can actually see, and you'll be attracted. So I thought about it. It was quite. Because when people ask questions, it's hard to understand. Sometimes they don't know exactly what they're asking, even what to speak of expressing it in a way that you understand what they're asking. But those, are you just trying to get money from us, or what's your life? Is this your life? So. After I thought about it, it was quite an interesting answer. Any other questions or comments?
I was going to say that it seems as though, sort of, as a soul, you have a certain amount of desiring ability, sort of inherent, and if you spread that out over a lot of things, then by definition it's kind of like it's shallow but many branch. And if you put all that desire in one place, it's very potent, like a laser beam or something like that. And that those kings, and also with Haridas Thakur, when those men were in prison and they were asking his favour, and he said, may you stay as you are now, and they were a bit shocked because they wanted to get out, almost out of their imprisonment. That the idea was that at that time, all the other things that you're attached to and that you spread your liking desires out for, they're all not present before you, and so all you have a capacity to actually focus, and the more you're in a difficult situation, the more you focus.
If you're fortunate.
If you're fortunate.
If you're that pure to that point, that serious.
Mm-hmm.
But also on the material level, we have a certain amount of desiring capacity, but on the spiritual level we have an unlimited amount of. So when our desires are focused on on the spiritual level, and they have to be focused if they're going to be on the spiritual level, then by touching the unlimited, then the part of us that's unlimited awakens, and then our desires become unlimited. And we could say, when our desires are focused on the limited world, then our desires are limited, and our ability to fulfill them is also limited. But when we touch Krishna with our desires, and especially when it's focused, then that desire becomes an unlimited burning flame. So much so that Mahaprabhu gives, that's the teaching of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Cannot live a moment without Krishna.
Well, somebody gave a memoir about that when they were doing that Chaitanya marathon.
Yeah.
And there was some devotee, I don't remember her name, and she had some function, some printing function, and she was working day and night, constantly working, and she didn't have it all. And when they told Prabhupada about it, he said, yes, she's working with spiritual energy. The way he said it, it really struck me when I heard it, that, oh, there's a different way of working, you know, that I'm not actually able to access at this time.
It's service, loving service, devotional service. So that is here, and then our desires to save and love and serve Krishna and blossom, or burst into flames. Tigers. So what's you have it all worked out for tomorrow?
Not fully, but